few weeks ago, I had the pleasure of attending a learning and development conference in Johannesburg, South Africa. And one of the speakers who gave me some think shifting is Frank de Beer, who's director of the Arbinger Institute, South Africa. And the Arbinger Institute's mission is amazing, bringing humanity to the workplace. You articulate very beautifully with very simple and memorable models that behavior and mindset are not the same thing. And of course, that they coexist and interrelate. Help us here. What, how do they differ, and what do they mean?
Thanks, David. It's always a pleasure to engage with you, and especially on a topic where I'm so passionate about. Just touching on the mission of bringing humanity to the workplace doesn't really mean that the workplace is inhumane. It means that we have a lens and a focus of seeing people as people, and we really care about their objectives, challenges, needs, dreams, inspirations, etc. So we have three meta questions that I always ask, and the first one is: am I willing and able to lead by example? And that doesn't necessarily mean I'm a manager. It means that when there's a change coming to the organization, when we launch a new product, do I embrace it? Do I have the willingness and ability to have an impact? But the second and the third question relates to your point. And the second one is asking the question, am I curious enough to understand where I'm part of the problem? That means that it's very easy to blame and say that manager or this company or that job or this resource or lack of resources is implication without considering my role in it. So the question also asks, where have I failed to make things easier and where have I made things harder for other people? And the last question is, am I curious enough to understand how I impact others? And for me, that's what it's about. It's about doing my job, living my life in such a way that I care about others in that job map or that landscape that I operate in, so that when I do my job, that I consider them and we achieve collectively. So your question about mindset is we at Arbinger have a framework that we call the results that we're experiencing, if it's financial results, if it's engagement surveys, if it's wellness results, whatever the result is that we're experiencing, that's driven by our behavior. Now, if it's organizational context, an organization is made up of all the individuals that's in that organization. So our collective behavior drives the results that we experience. And that behavior comes from our mindset, how I view the world, how I view my company, how I view my manager, how I view my job. And of course, the most important one is how do I view myself? All of those elements drive my behavior. If I don't like the change or what my manager, that will show up in my behavior in terms of resistance and whatever other associated behaviors.
What you shine a light on for us is something that is often in the shadow system of ourselves and, of course, of our organizations as a result of that. And that is in the context of management, particularly. And you'll notice I haven't said leadership.
Yes.
It's a lot about us, meaning the management cohort, getting them, our subordinates, to do better. And what is really helpful for us here is flipping the script. Not only is self-reflection exactly that, is not just spending a lot of time applying my mind to how this organization or my team or them, they can be better, but equally, how can I be better? And it would be really helpful. Please repeat those two questions that you mentioned just now about enabling or hindering work and problems.
Am I curious enough to understand how I impact others? And also, am I curious enough to understand how I'm part of the problem?
Yeah, it's amazing because oftentimes, if we see this through a psychometric test, we score high on influence. It's quite easy to respond in a self-congratulatory way, going, "Oh, wow, I'm such a positive, I'm such a great leader, and lots of this individualism and ho heroics," as opposed to, "Okay, so I score high on this particular system or graph or metric, But oftentimes that assessment doesn't qualify in what way. So without being sort of binary about it and good influence, bad influence, because we can safely assume we probably, are all of the above in certain ways, in
Yes.
certain contexts, and hopefully we get better at these things as we get older. So our results, and this, I guess, again, is in our individual capacity, agnostic of work, but in our lives, and I guess most particularly in the context of organizational performance, you mentioned our results, as in our company results, are driven by our collective behavior.
Yes.
And that's significant because an organization is the sum of all the people
Exactly.
and the complexity that comes with, right? Because I have an opinion, you have an opinion, I've got a history, you have a history, we put that all together. Is there any wonder why this aspect of organizations is so, I guess, chaotic, crazy, but also enchanting if we harness it in a curious way.
So fascinating, David, as we do a self-assessment in some of our interventions, where we rate how do we view our organization and how do we view ourselves. It's normally as part of a leadership intervention. And fascinating that self-deception gap, where we see the organization as being so inward, an organization that's self-centered, organization that doesn't care. But then we look at ourselves and we see ourselves as outward and almost the exact opposite. And how could that be? If all of us are seeing the people as people and we care about them and how we impact others, but yet the organization don't, if we are the organization. And that self-deception gap, and you can also take home and your family and really look at how do we view them? Sometimes they are also just objects to us and not people.
Sure. Yeah, I had a conversation this very morning about that. A colleague spoke reflectively of sending two correspondences to two different people that she's worked with, numerous times over numerous periods of time, and getting sort of curt and vacant responses from these two recipients that seemed unbecoming of humanness and human interaction, albeit in the transactional world of work that is so prevalent, doesn't require or probably equate to an emphatic answer. Our discussion went around the degree of sort of human value, if you will, within each of us, and then, of course, how we interact in collectives. And it seemed simplistically that in these two instances, that maybe it was just contextual, maybe it was that day, whatever, we'll never know. But the thing is that those two individuals responded in a very transactional manner. And I jumped to the conclusion of going, is it because they see people as hindrances in the process of work? And so it's probably a good segue into, please share with us, because I found it magical, is you showed when you did your presentation two simple triangles. And just to take us through those, appreciating that the audience can't see the triangles, but you can tell us.
Sure. I think that when you look from a through a management lens, I've noticed so many times in organizations that the lack of efficiency, where managers spend most of their time in terms of keeping people accountable. And when we keep people accountable, it becomes that transactional process that you talk about, and it becomes the whole environment is affected. So the idea is to get people to be accountable. So not keep people accountable, but create accountable people. And how you do that is the similar model that I just explained to you, where we looked at firstly our mindset. How do we see the people around us? So if we look at our landscape, our manager, our people reporting to us, our peers, our customers, do we see and understand and care? What's their objectives, challenges, and needs? And based on our learning, we adjust our effort. And when I adjust my effort, I know what's important to them. I do my job in such a way that I consider them, and then measuring that impact that we get from it. So the triangle works both ways. And if I understand that whole landscape, all the different areas, I really care about my job, and I deliver without be a manager on top of me asking, when have you done this? How have you done this? Why have you not done this? I can report back and say, based on my interaction with that landscape and my understanding, this is what I've done. This is how I grow. This is how I develop. And that's a agile way of looking at performance, efficiency, accountability, ultimately.
What I'm seeing very vividly, very visually, is the common environment that is an organization, which doesn't look dissimilar to a farmyard with a bunch of silos and sheds and stuff, muck muck from
Yes.
livestock and stuff. And that one of the greatest challenges in organizations is to genuinely not hamstrung and tethered to KPIs and policies, but just because we choose to, in a sustainable manner, is have a shared responsibility for not
Yes.
just what we do around here, but how we do it and how we treat each other. Because there's so much, customer obsession and all these sort of, very noble sounding things. But what about it? What about the way we treat each other?
Yes.
Can you talk us through the behaviors of an inward mindset and an outward mindset?
Sure. I think that let's put it in a team or organizational context. If we look at inward organization, so that is an organization that other people's objectives, challenges, and needs is not as important as mine. So that's the first point. So what behaviors do you see when you view organization or a team like that? Inward mindset drives then behaviors like disregard, blame, silo thinking, disengagement, stagnation, resistance. I mean, the list goes on. I mean, can you imagine if I only care about me, what the impact would be on creativity and innovation? Or communication, etc. When we look at outward mindset organizations, those are organizations where people matter like I matter. I care about your objectives, your dreams, your challenges, your needs, and I do my job in such a way that I consider them. You'll see behaviors like awareness. I'm aware of how I impact you. Accountability, where, as I've mentioned to you, we create accountable people. It's not my manager keeping me accountable. I really take accountability for my role, my growth, and my development. We'll see collaboration because I'm so aware and in touch with what's required in the other team, with my peers, with my direct reports, with the other parts of the organization that I collaborate better. Engagement. I really love my job. I've got a passion. I'm so involved. I'm engaged. You'll see innovation at levels that you've never seen before, and cooperation and volunteering to cooperate, and not just you are tasked to go and operate. Those are just some, I mean, it's not an exhaustive list, but those are some prime examples of where you normally see the issues. Organizations come to us and say that I don't have an engaged workforce. Quiet quitting is happening. We see things like people are resigning without even having other alternatives. And the question is really, how do we care about those people? Did we care about those people if that's the results that we see? I hope that's the one, the part that you're referring to, David.
Yeah, that was it, spot on. The example that you've just used now of quiet quitting is slightly oxymoronic in that we can generally see it, we can feel it clearly in ourselves. I'm talking particularly in this instance in others, particularly if they have gone from a motivated, engaged state to quiet quitting. So they're
Yes.
still punctual and they still show up and whatever, but the energy and the enthusiasm doesn't go beyond just what their mindset is likely saying to do this to stay out of trouble. And it's a very, very poor reflection on organizations and greater society. And I don't seek to blame anything or anyone by this comment, by the way, that people, the great resignation, as it's referred to, even in economically challenged as opposed to, economically
Yes.
more buoyant environments, are quitting, as you said, without somewhere to go, because staying is more awful and terrifying than leaving, albeit even if it is to some degree possibly or maybe not a knee jerk. Most people are not going to be foolish about these things because there's a lot at stake, not just for them, oftentimes others. So, I just wanted to come back to the inward and outward mindset. Others don't matter like I matter. I focus on my results. And the subtext is my objectives and behaviors are self-focused. People are objects or obstacles that I blame. And
So, I view people in three ways when I see them as an object. Firstly, as a vehicle. So it's almost like a mean. So I engage with you to see what I can get from you so that I can achieve my objective. The second one would be I see them as a obstacle or a problem. So what do we do of obstacles? We avoid them or we put them out of the way. And lastly, is the irrelevance. I mean, those are the mails that goes out without including the person. Or when we're in a meeting, we don't ask for input from that particular point of view because we really just don't care about those objectives. And I mean, I want to ask the question, if you look at quiet quitting and all of those things we've just mentioned, why do people not speak up? Why do they not ask for help? And I think that a lot of time it talks to that environment and how we see people and treat people. But it's also to do with relationships, most of the time between the manager and the employee. There might not be psychological safety. So I don't speak up. I don't want to make a mistake. So I just do, like you said, the bare minimum to stay out of trouble. And the result, if you just look from a wellness point of view, it's massive. And this is where you see that inwardness at play. And I think that there's so many areas of where we don't even link cost to it, like opportunities missed, creativity and innovation, that it makes such a business case for really considering and being sensitive towards it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Hey, I mean, you've mentioned creativity and innovation a number of times in this conversation. And if we think of the really interesting, not just net high net worth, but really interesting organizations, say of the last 50 to 100 years, they've been innovative and creative. And while the true or accurate definition of innovation is beyond the topic and need of this conversation. And I say that because innovation's bandied about is because we do something new, it means it's innovative. It might just be mean that it's not actually innovative, it's just a new addition or an expansion to our existing portfolio. I'll leave it at there because I can get a bit soapboxy about that. But back to what you were talking about is probably the first casualty of my morale and creativity and a willingness to do more than the minimum requirement is very palpable. The interesting thing is, no matter how many personal development courses and mindfulness courses, etc., that we've done and sincerely practice in our lives, my belief is that essence never leaves us. And
Becomes
so
more sophisticated.
At least sometimes we like to think it is, right? And to your point is the quiet quitting and then the leaving, the resigning with immediate effect and nothing to go to. Just can't do it anymore. The behavior is actually the same. And I'm not judging anybody, by the way, not for a second, because sometimes I'm certain people do it just literally to save their sanity. I can't and I don't want to do this anymore.
So to the outwardness, if I really care about you, I see you as a person or as a human first. A human's got a need to be heard. If I make a mistake, I want to be able to rectify it. I want if I if successful, I want to have that feedback. Humans got needs, and I think that's where we recognize the person first, and then secondly, be curious enough to understand what's the objectives, challenges, and needs of that person. And I think by your mindset, you'll see the behaviors follow, and you'll see the care in it, and that's important. Sometimes it's like with children. I give my children food, and not expecting anything in return. Now, the same, this is the amount of care that I talk about. When I see a person as a person and understand the objectives, I do my job considering them without expecting anything in return. And a lot of times you see that in the opposite way in organizations play out where we inward and I'll do this for you if I can get this back. And that's not conducive to creativity or innovation. And I know that your definition of innovation, I agree with it. But I think where this also from an outwardness point align is I care enough about the differences where in personality and in terms of EQ, in terms of all that diversity that we have in an organization, that I care enough embracing it and optimizing it. And that's where you get great results from an innovation creativity point of view. But if we're inward towards one another, we miss that and the intersectionality of all of that. And that's where I think South Africa as a country have sometimes have failed, where we don't see people as people and care enough about people.
I'm so aware of your choice of language. It's beautiful because I can hear that you practice what you teach. And I'll tell you what I mean is it's easy to do as I say, right?
Yes.
And live in a world of one's own hypocrisy. But just the way you articulate things have a very unpunitive and judgmental approach. And so appreciating that the depth and breadth of organizational climate and culture and people and financial health is something we could no doubt talk about for weeks without a single break, even for a cup of tea.
For sure.
Let's say, for example, I have a small business and the business is a couple of years old and we've scaled really quickly. And literally overnight, we have become the victim of our own success. Our company is 5 years old and we have 15 staff. We've gone literally overnight from what we knew and were pretty good at, and our customers and revenues are evidence thereof, to becoming too big too quickly, and we now don't know what to do. So the fallout is our staff morale. Practically, can you give us one thing to do today that we can start on immediately and possibly maintain for the rest of our lives to rebuild our morale with the intention of rebuilding it and then maintaining it as a thriving organizational climate? One thing that we can start today.
I love this scenario and I think it's so relevant. I've worked in organization, entrepreneurial organizations, and it's a lot of time the case. And it's not about reinventing the wheel. I think that the work of Abhijit is deceivingly easy to understand and it's difficult to execute because of the human emotions, etc. So my point of advice would be is to have conversations with one another, but with the right mindset. So care about the individual. Enough that you see him as a person. And then ask the questions. So the question I would ask is, how do somebody in my role affect you positively or negative? What can I do differently? And how frequently would you like me to keep myself accountable to you for those impact? So just as we talked earlier, what we then actually do is we see others, we care about others, we adjust our efforts, and we measure our impact. And it's all just about having a conversation, really caring about that individual and be authentic.
It's starting with care and openness. And while simple in principle, that's our challenge. And that's why people like you exist to help us navigate these things because they're difficult.
And
And
what's typically the response is we want to tell people how they should change.
sure.
The reality is, I cannot change you. I can only change myself.